March is Women's History Month, and Paul Bunyan Broadcasting is teaming up with the United Way of Bemidji Area, Women United, and the Beltrami County Historical Society to celebrate the legendary women of Beltrami County. And that includes with the Living United podcast. This month, we'll have weekly podcasts featuring women who have made huge impacts in Beltrami County and the women who are making tomorrow's Beltrami County history today. The Legendary Women of Beltrami County is presented by First National Bank Bemidji and North Homes. And we will hear from the Legendary Women of Beltrami County next.
North Homes Children and Family Services is seeking licensed alcohol and drug counselors to provide outpatient services at our Bemidji clinic. Our substance use disorder program serves both adolescents and adults. North Homes provides comprehensive assessments, weekly group and individual sessions, and we also participate in specialty courts and multidisciplinary teams. We offer a flexible schedule, generous benefits, and PTO. Our continuum of care allows us to provide whole person care while connecting to additional supportive services. We need your passion. Come grow with us today. To apply, please visit northhomes.org.
Hi, I'm Danae Alamano, and this is Living United.
And I'm Kev Jackson. We continue to celebrate the legendary women of Beltrami County during Women's History Month in association with United Way of the Bemidji Area, Women United, and the Beltrami County Historical Society. Danae Alamano, who is our latest legendary woman of Beltrami County?
We have with us today Kay Mack, who has been the community extraordinaire all around, ending her career at the county as the administrator for our Beltrami County.
Well, welcome aboard.
Well, thank you. Thank you. It's really cool to be here.
Well, Kay, let's just start by hearing your story. You've been a part of the Bemidji community pretty much your whole life. Your sister shared her story, so we know you ventured west for a little while before getting back to God's country.
Right. Only four years of my grade school, we were in Crookston, so okay. Bemidji really is my home. And I actually had the wonderful opportunity to grow up on LaSalle Lake, which is now the LaSalle Recreation Area. And so that was a really cool, idyllic childhood. But graduated from Bemidji High School, and I went to Bemidji State University. At the time, it was because all I could afford. We were a really very large family, so my parents couldn't really afford to board us at anywhere else. So I say that, but it ended up being such a blessing because that is a really awesome university. We're really blessed to have it here. So that kind of, I majored in business administration and applied for a job with the county in order to get some experience interviewing and got a job. And that started a really long career with Beltrami County. I started when I was only 20 years old.
Wow.
Sounds young now.
Ah, yes. I look to the sky and remember. well, Kay, you know, obviously you were with the county for a long time, and we'll talk about that in a moment, but your stay in Bemidji included many other ventures, many other volunteer ventures. You've been involved in a lot of things.
Lots and lots. So I kind of grew up in a family of saying yes to everything that came our way, and giving back. And I probably couldn't name them all, but I was on the United Way board and actually was president. At one time I was on the campaign cabinet, and I was on, we used to call it the allocations committee. So that those were all really good segues into getting on the board. And I'm currently on the board of the Bemidji State University Foundation. I've been very active in my church on the council and finance council and school board and church council, cancer society board. I'm just not going to be able to think of them all because it's just, when you're in elected positions like I was in, it gives you a lot of opportunity to do other things. That's the best way to put it. I just had really good opportunities. Servants of Shelter when it was alive and well. And we were housing homeless people in our churches. I chaired our church's week every year and was on that steering committee. Like I say, if I stopped and thought, it's been really fun.
That's awesome. And currently, well, we could go into currently later. Let's talk about your work at the county. You started at age 20 at
right,
the county.
Right.
What was your first job there?
I was the, it was called deputy treasurer. It was an accountant, bookkeeper to the county treasurer. And then when I was still pretty young, had three young children, my boss announced he was going to move out to the West Coast, and so I had to make the decision about whether I run for elected position, you know, risking a lot with a young family, risking maybe not having a job when it was all done. But at 29, I was actually elected as the county treasurer, so that was a very, very, very wonderful opportunity. And from there, I think I was treasurer for about 20 years before the county combined the positions of auditor and treasurer, and the board appointed me to the combined position, and then I had to stand for election that next election cycle. And so I did that for another, I don't know, like four terms. So now I'm up to about 36 years, something like that. And then I had served one time 20 years ago in between Greg Lewis was the county coordinator and Tony Murphy, the administrator. I was served as interim administrator, and knew it wasn't a job that I wanted. I just wasn't ready for it at that point. And then 10 years later, when it came up again, I decided I'd apply for and was appointed Beltrami County Administrator. So that opened up a whole bunch of new doors and the ability to be a catalyst for really good things in the community.
How long were you administrator?
Just short of 9 years, I think.
Okay. Now, you're supposedly retired.
Yeah.
But I, everywhere I go, I still see her. K-Max in the middle of everything still.
I still like to stay involved, and that was one of my concerns in retiring, is am I going to be stimulated? And I am really encouraging people who are retired to find their passion somewhere. And right now I'm on the BSU Foundation and on my church finance council and on the Sanford Hospital Board. Well, that was one I didn't mention earlier. That's
I was
going to
say,
it's a really big one.
It's a pretty big one, yeah.
And really important to the community. But I am chairing the capital campaign to build a new battered women's shelter.
And we talked with your sister Sue a lot about that. But yeah, you are front and center there. How did you get involved in that? And what's your passion there?
Well, I Phil Hodapp served on the board for the Battered Women's Shelter for many years. And then when they launched a capital campaign, he was on it and asked me if I would just join. I don't know how many months they'd been meeting then. And I said yes, as I'm prone to do. And and then when their chair stepped down about a year later, they asked if I would serve as chair. And so I had the time, and by then had really built a passion for it. You learn on these committees about the amazing work they do. And so that's kind of how it went. I said yes.
Okay.
And how's it doing? How's the capital campaign going?
It's doing really, really well. We've had some strokes of genius in who we've gotten on the capital campaign committee since I was able to be chair, including adding Danae Alamano and Sue Kringen and Christian Miller. I probably shouldn't even name names because I'm going to forget who all we've added, but we really have a solid capital campaign committee. And we are... Our goal was $3.2 million. We're at $2 million, so we're more than 50% done. But I still consider our goal to be 3.2. It's my goal that we're going to get there, even though they could borrow money to make up the gap. If they borrow money, that means they've got payments, and that means they adjust a budget accordingly, and you really hate to see that.
We want to see them client-facing, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Yes, yes.
So, okay.
So while you're at the county, there's a very big project with Sanford. You mentioned you're on the board for Sanford. Can you share more how you partnered the county and Sanford on a big project for the community?
Yeah, we really, so a lot of pieces fell into place, you know, kind of how that happens. But after we had, as a community, and I say community because we had probably 25 stakeholders that do some form of mental health or another, whether it's the jail or the juvenile center or Upper Mississippi Mental Health, the county. We pulled people together to do a presentation to a senator from the metro area. Her name is Barb Goodwin, and Phil had met her through a statewide committee that he served on. And that committee, as you can imagine, it was down in St. Paul, and it was metro-centric. And so after the months and months of talking about solving issues in the metro, Phil Hodak invited her to come up to Bemidji. And we had something like literally maybe a week's notice that she was coming. Hmm. And so we sent out invitations, and we literally filled the county boardroom with providers that could tell her stories that blew her mind, you know, about the challenges we faced with no solutions. Because the solutions take money. Mm-hmm. Every solution takes money. We have a lot of nonprofits with a lot of heart, but you can't run a nonprofit without money. You can't, you know. So we got Barb Goodwin's attention, and I remember being down at a hospital conference in the cities when Barb called, and she said, "Kate, get me some language for a bill. I need to drop this bill next Monday." This was a Thursday or Friday. Huh. And I'm going to make Bemidji the poster child for mental health. And she got us a $2 million grant specifically for Beltrami County.
Wow.
And she was a metro legislator, mind you. Hmm. So that ended up opening the doors and becoming a catalyst to a ton of, it'd be too many to go through, the mental health services that we provide in Bemidji now that we weren't able to provide before that. We formed a mental health collaborative of the strongest partners, the ones with the biggest impact, and leveraged that into another grant. We got Prime West Health to donate a building, and we turned that building into a residential facility. Bemidji never had a residential facility. We were sending people literally to other states when they were in a mental health crisis. So we opened that facility, and then not more than 2 years later, we got the money to plan and build a second facility. The county owns both of those facilities, and then they leased them. They didn't want to be the provider. They just wanted to be the catalyst. Hmm. So they own the facilities and then lease them to Sanford, so that Sanford can do the good work.
Okay. Wow. One of many projects you've been involved in.
Yeah.
What are some of the other ones you think about that you think back now and you say, yeah, I'm really proud of this?
A really cool one that people would not ever think of as being a cool one is the solid waste transfer station. I don't know if people can remember the state that facility used to be in, but the county did not own it. And we did not operate it. Everyone just thought we did. And so we had a service agreement with a provider. They owned the facility. If we wanted to change something, it was really hard for us to do that because we didn't own or operate it. We just had a contract, and we were turning over the vast majority of the solid waste fees that we collect from our citizens to them to operate it. And it had gotten frustrating, and so again, we sought legislation to get money to either build or buy that transfer station. And once we got the money to build a new transfer station, then they came to the table for the first time and offered to sell it to us. So we bought that and fixed it up, built the solid waste program that is really hands down 8 times better than what we had before in the county. So that was a really big thing, especially to people who haul their own. They would have seen the facility before and after. So that was a really fun thing, really a big achievement. Mm-hmm. And then I think the road tax, even though people don't like sales tax, we had determined about 7 years ago maybe, that the county's needs, if we were to address all of the infrastructure, the literally crumbling roads, literally crumbling. Bruce Hasbargen, by the way, was at the helm of this. It would have been an $80 million bill.
Wow. Hmm.
And we created a PowerPoint presentation to introduce the facts and went all over the county, the rural areas of the county, and the city limits to let citizens see this is what we are facing. Hmm. We would have to either grind off asphalt and turn roads to gravel roads. I mean, who wants to think about doing that? We told them what our ability to finance it was, and it's in those cases either bonding or property tax or this sales tax, and we just got overwhelming support for sales tax. The county board was the one that, it doesn't go to a referendum. The county board has to pass that. But when they held a public hearing and the people came who had been to those listening sessions, there was just overwhelming support for it. So I have not asked what the impact has been now in the last couple of years, but we have addressed things that we wouldn't have gotten to for another, literally another 15 years, mm-hmm. and have addressed tens of millions of dollars worth of road issues. Because keep in mind, at the time that that was, if we hadn't done anything, good roads would have been crumbling too, you know. Mm-hmm. So Bruce has always had the philosophy, keep your good roads good, and then do everything you can to get your bad roads good. Mm-hmm. And so the county's well on its way to not having to scream that same. and then another one, probably the biggest impact for citizens was our out-of-home placement issues. I took the job as administrator, and as auditor, I didn't have to be very involved with human services, just mm-hmm. kind of know their finances. And literally within days of being administrator, the human services director came in and said, so this is a deal with our out-of-home placement numbers. And I am a numbers person and mm-hmm. an accountant, and it was clear that at that trajectory, this county was going to literally go broke. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking bankrupt type broke. And so, again, we started lobbying, going down to the legislature for 3-4 years, and telling them, you know, the first year they just kind of need to hear it, try to absorb it. It was kind of funny because it got so that the committee chairs actually knew who I was.
That's good.
Yeah. But I would tell them, you know, I am not blowing smoke here. Either deal with this now or you'll be dealing with a bankrupt county in Minnesota, mm-hmm. something that's never happened before. Mm-hmm. And so we got, and then we also partnered with the Red Lake Nation. There's just some wonderful people up there that run Children and Family Services, and Sherry Goodwin, who incidentally was inducted into the BSU, it's not called the Hall of Fame, they're outstanding alumni. Mm-hmm. She got that this last year. Mm-hmm. But Sherry Goodwin leads that agency up there, and she worked with us, and of course with Daryl Seeke and the Tribal Council's blessings. We went down to the legislature and sat side by side to testify on Red Lake becoming what's called a tribal initiative, taking over all components of out-of-home placement on the reservation, including paying the bill. Hmm. And they not only got the legislation to allow them to do that, they got the funding to allow them to do that. So, and then they got further funding to build the building to house hmm. all the social workers that they need in order to do that. So it was a win-win-win. It's good for Red Lake. It's good for Beltrami County. And best of all, it's good for the children and the families.
Mm-hmm.
That's so huge. That was by far the most impactful thing that went on hmm. while I was administrator.
Wow.
So again, you've been here most of your life.
Yes.
And been very involved. So yes. What is it about Beltrami County and the Bemidji area that you find so appealing and so important?
You know, I could say I know nothing else, because that's kind of the truth. But, you know, I guess they've just, it's the community that has raised me and has raised people I love. Mm-hmm. And I'm not just talking my family, my friends and the people I worked with. It's just it's a really, really amazing community. When people would ask me about, you know, they'd call and want to know about moving to Beltrami County, and one of the things I could really brag about was how rich we are in nonprofits. You know, it's just amazing what goes on that government mm-hmm. can't possibly solve mm-hmm. by themselves. And the needs are great, and we have a lot of nonprofits. So people have a chance, if they're of that mindset, they can pick from, what would it be, Danae? 40
easily
mm-hmm. probably mm-hmm. I don't even know the number, nonprofits to work with. Mm-hmm. Plus I love the lakes. I love the lakes and the rivers and the trees and the change of seasons. We start complaining about this time of year, yeah. about the one season.
The one long season.
Yeah, yeah.
The really long.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I look out on those mornings when we've got new mm-hmm. snow and just, oh, it's just so beautiful. My husband sees it as work. I see it as beauty. You know? So,
I'm a big fan of 75% of the seasons in Minnesota myself. Well, Danae, what was it about Kay that made you chase her down for being a legendary woman of Beltrami County.
I think we heard a lot about it.
Yeah.
Someone I admire again. Actually, my mom grew up close by Kay and her family. So I said it with Sue, too. Just a family that most people in our community has a lot of admiration for. We should all be grateful for the work that they've done to better the Bemidji area. So thanks, Kay.
You're welcome. It's been an honor and a pleasure.
Any final thoughts or any appeals to your fellow residents about anything going on?
You know, I guess just people who stayed involved and well-informed, I always loved working with them, you know. And I would add, in this day and age, I love the friendly nature that we've always tended to have up here. And I really encourage people to do all of their communications with respect and understand because we really are diverse that way. So we have many people that think completely differently than their mm-hmm. next door neighbor, but just respecting that their opinion is pure mm-hmm. and worth something, and it just might be different than ours, and trying to find middle ground. Mm-hmm. I remember Joe Vinny said often, "We're all better when we're all better." And that wasn't his quote. It was someone else's. I'm not smart enough to know who.
It's Paul Wellstone, I think, maybe.
Yeah, it could be. Mm-hmm. And I just really like that one.
Yeah.
We take care of each other. It's good for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Kay Mack, thank you for taking the time today. Thank you for everything you did and are doing and will do for your community. We truly do appreciate it.
Same to both of you very much. I love the leadership that you both show.
Thanks, Kay.
Danae and I will be back with another legendary woman of Beltrami County next.
Can I list all the things you can do with First National Bank Bemidji Digital Banking in 30 seconds? Send money via email, transfer cash to a phone, to anyone, anywhere, whether you're out or at home. Your card gets lost? Not to worry. Turn it off from your phone. Do it in a hurry. Found it already? That was quick. Turn it on again with just one click. Control your teen's spending. Limit when, where, how. It's all quick and simple. You can start using it now. See for yourself what digital banking can do. First National Bank Bemidji. Member FDIC. Phew.
And we continue our series on the legendary women of Beltrami County as part of Women's History Month in association with the Beltrami County Historical Society, Women United, and the United Way of Bemidji Area. And, of course, we have Danae Alamano, as always, for Living United. Danae, who is our latest legendary woman of Beltrami County?
We have Natasha Kingbird here, who works at Northwest Indian CDC. She's also a Women United Award recipient this last year as well. So welcome, Natasha.
So, Natasha, tell us a little bit about what you're doing, what your work is.
So, currently I'm the Omishka lead at the Northwest Indian Community Development Center, and I oversee the Omishka Reentry Program, which serves men and women. I think a big step in the reentry program is that we actually are going on our sixth year, and with that we have opened up a pilot healing house for women transitioning home from incarceration, and a lot of those women are able to live there and will be working on trying to find housing, working on family reunification, and then also working on healing.
Okay. Yeah, I think that I don't know much about the stories, you know, far more than I do, but it seems to me that when somebody is let out, so to speak, they maybe don't know what to do, right? And that's where you come in.
Yes. So I think a lot of our, you know, Indigenous people have really had a hard time, you know, reentering the community because they go back to kind of like the same setting that had got them in to incarceration from the first start. And so I think with a lot of the voices that I've heard over time, it was really some of the barriers were housing, transportation, you know, no support, lack of support, and nobody that really believed in them. And so I think with the Omishka program, we really took a look at, like, really spending time with these women, making sure that we're calling them, checking on them, bringing them to ceremonies, making sure that, like, as a whole family, that they were good. And so I think, you know, I think the energy really went towards women because It was 20 women that I was supposed to serve, and with that 20 women, it turned into like 60, and then it turned into 120, and then it was, you know, no more than maybe 300 women just coming in over the past 5 years, and looking at, you know, what's happening in our community and what's going on with these women. And so with the voices that they've always shared is that, you know, there was some kind of trauma, they had lack of support, they didn't believe in themselves, or nobody believed in them. And so as time grew, we just like really created a space of welcoming at the NWICDC. We created culture groups, we created talking circles, we created recovery support groups, and really looked at it as like a family support. And so we also had like some elder women, you know, also sitting with the women, and so they were able to get guidance from an older lady. And you know, some of them might not have had moms, or you know, the relationship with their mom wasn't there, and so I think with that auntie-based programming, we just seeing that, you know, it created change. People felt comfortable. And so with that being said, you know, we have women that have been in the program that have been very successful, keeping their kids, getting their kids back, keeping jobs. And, you know, I think with having lived experience and going through this with the people that I was serving, you know, I've also seen a big change within my own life. Working with the women coming home from incarceration, because I also was incarcerated. But, you know, I after hearing the stories, I'm like, geez, my life wasn't that bad. Mm-hmm. You know, I just needed to make the right choices. And how did I do that? And really kind of implemented things that at the time maybe I needed within my life. And then also being inclusive and picking up that other girl and like telling her, just come on, let's go to ceremony, let's go to this event. And I know with the missing and murdered Indigenous women walk that we have here in Bemidji, that's something that I've included into our program so they could be inclusive with the community. And that started, you know, a little over 6 years ago. And that walk is held yearly. And so a lot of the people that are in that program are able to attend that as well and work on community events and just be inclusive to community. So I just really think it's working out.
Hmm. What was I mean, she said a lot of it right there, but yeah. What are some of the things that caught your eye and caught Women United's eyes about Natasha?
She's not afraid to do things different. She's not she talked a lot about inclusivity right there, and inclusivity can mean all parts, right? And Natasha is, I admire her ability to be able to do that. I think, I mean, you just sharing too about you have lived experience, so there's a relatable piece to the work you're doing. But she, I mean, when you talk about future women in history, what they're doing with the Healing House, this is really innovative and really important to our community and to the women that are in the program.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I also have, you know, I think with I attended a conference in 2016 or 2017 with Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition, and they're a coalition in the Twin Cities, and they really noticed the work that we were doing because of the women being released and, you know, just building relationships and them seeing, they're like, come down and speak with us and, mm-hmm. you know, attend the conference. And so we really built relationships. And so with Violence Free Minnesota, Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition, and the Sacred Hoop Coalition, we all came together and we did some surveys, and we surveyed over 60 women to really look at what are women dealing with and where is that trauma being held. And a lot of it was either sexual violence or trauma from domestic violence. And so that's really how the Healing House got created, is because we listened to those voices, and we put together this report of how could we help these women heal. And so I think creating that space for the Healing House is just been a blessing. And so we've seen people be successful. We've also seen people, you know, not really be successful just because of you know, maybe they had a partner being released, and of course they're in a relationship, so they want to be together, mm-hmm. and they, you know, leave. But I think it's just giving us more information so we can create a good report and add things that we think that will work and won't work. And so, you know, I'm really optimistic about this healing house and finding sustainable funding for it, mm-hmm. or just even keeping a house, you know, in the community for, you know, generations to come, just so that we have that space for women coming home from incarceration, because we do see a high number of women from our area, Leech Lake, Red Lake, and White Earth, you know, being sent to Shakopee and them needing that space to come home to. And I mean, I have a few ladies in mind already that, you know, are working on their pre-release plan, and the women's house currently is at full capacity, mm-hmm. and you know, we get intakes and just applications after applications. And so it's like we need this space for them to come home to. And so I really hope that with just people seeing the need that mm-hmm. We could work on, you know, with the Department of Corrections and the Judicial 9 branch, that we can come together and create a space for these women so we can stop the cycle of incarceration, mm-hmm. or, you know, or reduce the recidivism amongst Native American women and men.
Okay. So you mentioned that one time you had been incarcerated as well. What is your journey to where you're at today?
Oh, well, I just shared a little bit on Facebook. So I had lost my dad back in 2014, and, you know, I guess I think I wasn't really... I was just living, you know, and I didn't really, I'd end up in like a bad relationship or something. And, you know, so I look at my story, I'm like, it wasn't that bad. I always tried to get, you know, right. And something just pulled me away. But I think really after losing my dad and him not ever going to be there again, I just was like, geez, all he wanted was for me to be home, take care of your kids, you know, do what you got to do. You got this, you know, and so really knowing that I wasn't going to have those conversations again, that really pushed me to do better and raise. I had 5 kids at the time, but to raise them. And then so I had a son. He's going to be 8 on March 8th. And so he's going to be 8. Yeah. And so he really helped me be where I'm at today, too, because, you know, carrying him made me figure it out and, you know, knowing that I had to do this by myself or with no support, and also raise 5 other kids, that I had to just push myself to do the best I could. And so, you know, I've held a lot of jobs from 2014, but being at NWICDC since 2016, I believe I started volunteering. And I was actually just given a chance from an old elder woman, and of course Talia and Rhonda, you know, come do some beading and do some cultural work. And I'm like, you know, I didn't think I was qualified, but I was, because, you know, I carried that gift from my mom. And she was a elementary school beading teacher. So she really, you know, she knew what she was doing, and she taught me. So I was able to go share that with the community. And, you know, I started from the bottom at NWICDC, and I just, you know, humbly say where I'm at today is just from the people coming in, and then just me being dedicated and being there to just be an ear, you know, and mm-hmm. listen to mm-hmm. what our community needed, and just creating that space for people to come in.
I think on top of just, I mean, listening is a key, right? Mm-hmm. Key to, but, and then you act, right? Yep. You listen, you gather all the information. You talked about a report, but you use the report to then act. And
yes.
Yeah. That's the key, right?
Yes. And Danae, Natasha is also involved in a number mm-hmm. of other things mm-hmm. that are important and are part of some of the core things United Way is involved in.
Yeah, from Violence Free Minnesota to the Battered Women's Shelter. Can you share yes. more about your work there?
So I've been sitting on the Violence Free Minnesota board since it's going on 3 years. I took on another 2-year term with them. Actually, Andrea Kingbird, you know, got me into that and really pushed me to go take a step forward and be involved with that as a Native woman that came from Bemidji, and, you know, just to be inclusive and share some of the stuff that we experience up here with violence-free Minnesota, and just be a voice for our Indigenous relatives. With the Northwoods Battered Women's Shelter, you know, they reached out, and I really wanted to share my experience and also be able to have a voice in that space, because, you know, we all know that Bemidji sees a high number of Indigenous women that have been abused, and so I really like to be included in on those conversations in any way. I know I've been sitting on the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women group, the MMI 218, as an organizer for the last, I believe, 5 years. Mm-hmm. I said I started 6 years ago, but they recruited me right away because I showed up with my daughters, and I just, you know, it was 30 below zero, and they're like, we want your energy in that space. And so, you know, whatever it is that I can carry and give back, I'm there. And I believe that what I am sharing is some of the voices that can't be heard right now, and so I'm able to be that voice.
What would you say most of us just don't understand about people who are coming out of an incarcerated situation?
So I think a lot of it, a lot of people that are getting released, you know, they all have, well, I wouldn't say mental health disabilities, but it's 10 times harder because they have barriers. You know, they can't rent, they look at their background. They also carry, like, anxiety and things like that. And so, you know, I think that that we just have to be more kind of open to either working with people that have been incarcerated, because a lot of people are really smart that have been incarcerated. I mean, you wouldn't think so, but they have to hold a job in there. They've done a lot of time thinking and reading, and I know a few guys that are on our reentry team have all lived experience being incarcerated, and they're very knowledgeable with, you know, books and reading and writing and being able to connect with members coming home from incarceration on a different level. And so they're able to share their experience with that, you know, guy coming out. But I'd also like to say that our organization, you know, also, it doesn't serve just Native American men. We've also had, you know, some white and black men come into our program and actually really sit in on our talking circles and things like that and get connected. So we're open to, you know, just not Indigenous men. But, you know, I think as Bemidji, that's one thing, you know, we need to be more building those relationships and just coming together as a community, because it takes a whole community to heal people. And so I think that is one of the barriers, you know, it's just like people having stigma against those people coming home from incarceration. Like, just give them a chance.
Yeah, I would think the opportunity to sit down with people who've had that shared experience, it's got to be really helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
Healing within it, definitely.
Yeah. Mm. Well, Danae, anything else you want to cover with Natasha before we wrap it up?
I think you shared a little bit about this, but what drives you to do all the things you do?
I used to think just staying busy and finding something, but, you know, when I feel it in here, like in my heart, that I feel like I'm doing the right thing just to be helpful and, like, want to see somebody be better, that's really what drives me. And when seeing them, you know, be happy after they've accomplished, like, enrolling in school, holding a job, getting their first lease signed. There's multiple successes within our community, and I just, you know, honor every little success. And it doesn't have to be big. You know, I think coming to your first, you know, ceremony, whether going to ceremony or finding your own spiritual path, you know, that's the next success in itself. And so I really admire that when I'm able to just kind of like be a part of a little bit of somebody's growth. I think it's, maybe that's what drives me. you know, helps my heart, I guess.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
That's a great answer. Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. Well, Natasha Kingbird, thank you so much for sharing your story and sharing what you're doing. And thank you for the great work you're doing in our community, our greater community. Mm-hmm. Well, that's it for our series. March is winding down, and with it, Women's History Month. But what a great series, and what amazing stories we heard from so many women doing so many amazing things in Beltrami County today and certainly in the past. For Danae Alamano, I'm Kev Jackson. Thank you for being part of the series. Thank you to the women we talked to who've done so many amazing things for our community as well, and all the other women doing amazing things who will likely be part of the series in the future. I'm Kev Jackson, and this has been Living United.